Please turn your Bibles with me over to Luke. Luke chapter 23. If you are here and you're not listening online, then you can just read it off the wall. But the point is to make sure that I'm staying true to the text, because you never know. I could be making something up. It's my intention that we continue to look at the Luke Acts series and sharpen our tools to understand the Bible for ourselves so we can apply it to ourselves. We are fortunate to have three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And we know that Luke had access to Matthew and Mark because there's some things that are there verbatim, unless there's another Q source, another source that they all had access to. We know that Matthew had access to Mark. So when things unique come up, you need to ask yourself, where did Luke get that? And remember, this is a sequel, the Luke Acts sequel, and I'm excited about going into the Acts part of this sequel, because a lot of us don't spend a lot of time in Acts, but there's some fascinating things there. But he told Theophilus, the person he wrote both books to, that he carefully investigated these things. So when you see something unique, you have to ask yourself, who did Luke talk to get that information? Because he had some time in and around Jerusalem when Paul was in prison. And this sequel has to do with a guy named Paul being in prison in Rome awaiting trial. And Luke is giving Theophilus, who probably has something to do with that trial, the background to understand who Jesus is, who the people are that were opposed to him, who Paul is, and who the people are, which happen to be the same people, that are opposed to him and they're waiting for trial to arrive in Rome. Okay, with that background, let's look at the death and the burial of Jesus. It says here, I have to get in the right chapter because, you know, I should be in the right chapter. It says in verse 26, as they led him away. Oh, by the way, there's something missing here. And you probably don't think about it, but there is something missing. In the other Gospels, after Pilate said, go ahead and crucify him, what did the Roman soldiers do? They took him and they beat him and they mocked him. Right? Luke doesn't mention that. Does Luke know about that? Yeah. He just doesn't want to draw attention to that. So basically in Luke, when we had him go to Herod and Herod's people mocked and beat him, you have three different sets of beatings. You had Jesus before the Sanhedrin, they beat him. You had him before Herod and they beat him. And then before they sent him off to be crucified, they mocked and beat him again. And that's important to know because by the time Jesus gets to the point, he can't even carry his own cross. He's been abused terribly. So Luke leaves that out. He says, they led him away, the soldiers. They seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. Now, if you think about it, there's, and you hate to call it irony, but there's irony here, right? A cross is made up of two beams of wood. Who do you have fashion that for you? A carpenter. Has Jesus ever carried beams of wood before? Yeah, all his life he carried beams of wood. And, you know, they started as trees, and they didn't go down to Lowe's or to Home Depot and buy a beam. They went out, and they found a tree, and they cut it down, and they hewed the beam out of there. And they did that a lot in order to make roofs across houses. Jesus is used to carrying beams. Can't carry these two beams. He's that worn down. So they grab this guy named Simon of Cyrene, and all three of the synoptics mention Simon of Cyrene. And what does that usually tell you? When you have a name for somebody, it usually means the church knows them. It usually means that they became believers and they could testify to these things. Now, Simon wasn't a believer at this point. He would just happen to be somebody who was in Jerusalem, like the thousands and thousands of other people there for the feast. But they grabbed him and made him carry the cross. And it says here that, verse 27, a large number of people followed him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. And then we have something unique to Luke that if we didn't have Luke, we wouldn't know. Verse 28, he says, Jesus turned and said to them, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children. For a time will come when you will say, blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us, which is a quote from Hosea in the Old Testament passage. In verse 31, he says, for if men do this when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? Do you remember Palm Sunday? We talk about Palm Sunday. When Jesus entered Jerusalem, and Luke told us something about that, that he stopped and he wept over Jerusalem and said, oh, if you, only you, had known the day of your visitation, but you're going to be surrounded by armies. We talked about the destruction of Jerusalem and how important that was to the book of Luke. And you might not have believed me, but here he is on his way to the crossing. Guess what he mentions? Yeah, it's going to happen. Don't weep for me, weep for yourselves. Things are going to be bad. If this is what happens when the wood is green, what happens when it is crisp and ready to go up and fire? Now, Matthew didn't have that. Mark didn't have that. Who did Luke have to talk to hear what Jesus said? Because Luke wasn't there. He carefully researched it. Well, it could have been some of the women who were following and weeping and wailing. Could have been Simon of Cyrene, who was behind him carrying the cross. Interesting that Luke would bring this up again. Because obviously this was on Jesus' mind this whole last week he was there. And we talked about the idea of ending the old covenant and establishing a new covenant, a new agreement, and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. And that was on Jesus' mind as he was headed towards his death. It says here, in verse 32, two other men, both criminals. All we know is they're criminals. We know from the other gospels that they were thieves. Okay? Two other men were also led out with him to be executed. All right. Remember I told you how much the Romans hate riots and they're very nervous of people being together? Well, one of the things they like to do was to show that they had authority and do what other people couldn't do. Their own leaders couldn't even do that, and that was to kill people. Okay? Now, these thieves, all we know is they're thieves. We're going to hear more about them from Luke than any other gospel writer. Now, I'm sure they've gone through years of trials and appellate courts, and they've appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court and lost, and now they can... No. We're probably talking about two guys that took advantage of all of these out-of-towners in town and stole something, right? And for that, the Romans decided to kill him, to give everybody an example. You don't do that kind of stuff when Rome is in charge. Did that happen yesterday? Did it happen the first week of the festival? We don't know. But it's not one of these things that they've been in prison for months and years. They got caught stealing something, and the Romans decided we're going to put them to death as an example to everybody else. And they do it in a very public place, a place where people coming and going can see them. So there are two other people that are going to be crucified. And by the way, wood was expensive. You wonder why Jesus had to take his cross. Why didn't he just leave it out there where they crucified people? Well, you know why. Why don't we leave stuff outside? Because it'd be gone. Somebody would take it. So after they crucified people, they brought it back and they stored it. And then they would take it out, and you had to carry your own cross all the way out to be crucified, which is just another humiliation thing. So it says here, when they came to the place called the Skull, and he didn't give us Golgotha because that is an Aramaic word and that wouldn't mean anything. It would mean anything to the recipient of this, to Theophilus. He says, there they crucified him along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, are you ready for this? You remember there are seven sayings of Jesus on the cross? I only know this because, you know, some towns do Good Friday services and all the different ministers preach and they all get one saying of Jesus on the cross, and they, up in Fort Morgan where I came from before, they were supposed to have 3 minutes, you know, to talk about that one saying. You try to get a preacher to only preach for 3 minutes. Doesn't happen. Okay. But you're going to get another saying that is unique to Luke here. And that is, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Who was that directed for? Was that for everybody? Well, read it in context. It says here, and they divided up his clothes by casting lots. Is it possible that we're talking about the Roman guards that nailed Jesus on the cross here? Yeah. Unique to Luke. Who told Luke Jesus said that? One of the bystanders? Maybe one of the soldiers who became a believer? Maybe the centurion that we're going to see later? Yeah. Somebody said, Jesus said this as we were casting lots for his clothes. Yeah. Remember, wood's expensive. Clothes are expensive. Any kind of cloth. And Jesus had a unique one. He had an undergarment that was seamless. It was woven in one piece. And they decided not to rip it up because even parts of cloth were worth something. Remember the days my grandmother used to talk about the rag man? Yeah. Yeah, those days are gone now. You know, you go to all the thrift stores and stuff that doesn't even sell. Of course, then those go to Africa from there. But cloth, yeah, it was expensive. So at any rate, it looks like Jesus was talking about the soldiers. In verse 35, the people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, he saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one. You guys know often in the Bible study, I ask you to practice your sneering. Yeah. It's a special skill, sneering. Maybe it's lost. But they were sneering at him, saying this. These are the religious leaders. These are the people that came to debate Jesus. These are the people who are supposed to give guidance in people's spiritual lives. These are the people who are supposed to handle the sacrifices that had to do with their forgiveness. And this is how they thought about Jesus, as they sneered at him. It says, the soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. That is the only thing you see about the Roman soldiers that did not look good. But it's understandable, isn't it? I mean, they are in Jerusalem because Rome is afraid that Jerusalem is going to rebel. It's like our soldiers being in Afghanistan, or the ones we recognize with the Vietnam, or the ones that went to Europe. How do they feel about being there? They didn't want to be there. They wanted to be home. The king of the Jews. These are the people that have caused Rome so much problems. That by 70 AD, they're going to completely destroy this town. Dismantle it, stone by stone, including the temple. It says, there was a written notice above him which read, this is the king of the Jews. And it must have been written in either Greek or Latin. It's one of the languages, because the soldiers could read that. They weren't at Jesus' trial. They didn't know. But here's this guy that's supposedly the king of the Jews. Remember, there's another dialogue in John about them going to Pilate and say, hey, he said he was the king of the Jews. And Pilate said, you know what I wrote? I wrote. What I've written, I've written. He's the king of the Jews. And it just shows the tension, the animosity they have. So, one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself for us and us. That's nice. Hey, your last chance. You know, break us out of here. We're with you. But he did it in a taunting way. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. This is unique to Luke. If we didn't have Luke, we wouldn't have this dialogue. We wouldn't have this. Who told Luke this story? Who did he interview to talk to about this? Well, it's probably one of the soldiers, or if not the centurion, right? But there's something interesting in this story. How many people have been using the name Jesus? He used it. The criminal knew Jesus' name. Had he had contact with Jesus before? How did he know that Jesus was innocent? How did he know that Jesus wasn't deserving of this punishment? Well, he probably had contact with Jesus before. Yeah. But he's still a criminal. He's still a thief. He still knows that he is getting his just reward, because this is what the criminals are supposed to do. This is what the thieves are supposed to get. Right? But he rebukes his friend. We don't know if they work together. We don't know that. We just kind of assume they do. All right? They know that they're both there because of what they did. And he said, we deserve it. He doesn't. He doesn't. And then he asked Jesus for something. Remember me when you come in your kingdom. And he says, you know what? This isn't a long future thing. Jesus said, today, you'll be with me in paradise. This is fascinating because you know what happened? It's a long day. There's a lot happens this day. We don't know what time it is at this point, right? We know that Jesus was on the cross before noon. We know that because at noon, the sky turned dark until 3 o'clock, right? We don't know what part of that day he said that, but you know, Jesus going to a place where, what does Peter say? A day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. Things that I remind people when we are at celebrations of life, funerals, worship, memorial services, there's no time. There's no time there. But basically he said, you know, you don't have to wait very long when my kingdom comes because he's the king. He is the king. Now, I remember as a kid in a group that was really big in, you know, you have to be baptized to be saved. This was always brought up. So, well, you know, was this guy baptized? And it just threw the, hey, listen. You ever heard those arguments? Jesus is king. Okay. Jesus is king. He was king then. He's king now. He can do whatever he wants. But if he tells you, you need to repent, I would suggest repenting. Right? Don't try to pull some, hey, I don't know if this guy repented. This man was influenced by Jesus. And let's see who else was influenced by Jesus. It says here, in verse 44, it was now about the sixth hour. Okay, guys, remember that's noon, right? Darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour, which would be 3 o'clock, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Yeah. Doesn't get much ink in Luke, but it's in there. What's the deal with the temple? What's the deal with the curtain? Matthew mentions it torn in two from top to bottom. And then a lot of weird things happened, and there was earthquakes and all kinds of stuff. Luke doesn't mention that. But he does mention a curtain. A curtain torn in two. Do you guys know what that's about? This is the curtain that separated the most holy from the holy of holies. Right? And only the priest could come into the most holy. And only once a year could somebody go into the Holy of Holies through that curtain. Actually, probably around that curtain, right? They would tie a rope to his ankle. Because if he passed out and died in there, they couldn't go get him. They would have to pull him out with a rope. Because this represents the presence of God. That's what it represented. It was that way in the tabernacle. And the temple was fashioned after the tabernacle. A place you could only go once a year, and that's supposedly where the Ark of the Covenant was, the mercy seat and all that. The only problem was Pompey the Great went in there and it was empty. Whole different story. Highly, highly symbolic. What separated God, the presence of God, from everybody else is gone. It's gone now. The temple is no longer going to serve that function. Why? Because the old covenant, it's gone. And now there's a new covenant. So, that's all the ink it gets. Because I'm sure Theophilus didn't understand the concept of the Holy of Holies and the holy place. He didn't understand that kind of thing. But Luke thought it was important enough to put in here, so it gets one sentence. He says, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And with, and when he said this, he breathed his last. There's another one unique to Luke. Somebody told Luke Jesus said that, because it's not in Matthew, it's not in Mark, it's not in John. Somebody who was there said, this is what he said. Now, we have some things that are missing here, right? Remember the, my God, why have you forsaken me? The Eloi, Eloi, right? Which was a quote from a psalm in Hebrew in the Old Testament. And of course, that wouldn't have meant anything to Theophilus. So it's not in there. But he said, into your hands I commit my spirit. And then he breathed the last. And there we have the death of Jesus. Now, what we do know, time-wise, is this is quick. This is quick. We do know that the criminals on both sides, they're still kicking. Kicking. That sounds terrible. They're still alive. Okay. They are. But we got a problem, because this is Friday, and at 6 o'clock on Friday, it becomes Saturday. It becomes the Sabbath. And they want all of this done and over before the Sabbath. So they go and they talk to Pilate, and Pilate says, yeah, go ahead. And they broke their legs. Now, the reason they broke their legs is because you needed your legs. You know how you die on a cross? It's asphyxiation. You can't breathe anymore. You can't push yourself up enough to take in a breath. And with your legs broken, you have no chance. But John actually does something interesting. He quotes an Old Testament passage and says, that's to fulfill this Old Testament passage that says none of his bones were broken. Because when he came to Jesus, he was dead already. And to make sure they thrust a spear into his side. And John says, the one who did this testified. He became a believer, and he told everybody that I saw Jesus die. It says here, in verse 47, the centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, surely this is a righteous man. Centurion, somebody's over the soldiers, 100 soldiers, that century, all that 100 stuff, right? So he was there and he said this, but Luke is the one that has it coming out this way. In Matthew, Mark, it comes out another way. He says, surely this was the son of, and we have trouble with the translation. We don't know if it says God or a God. It wouldn't be surprising for a Roman who is polytheistic to say a God, right? It would be surprising to say God. But maybe he was influenced by the Jewish faith. Maybe he became a monotheistic person. I don't know. But here's what Lukeasm says. Surely he was a righteous man. You know another translation for this? Surely this man was innocent. He was innocent. How important is that to what Luke is trying to get across to Theophilus? We've had Pilate say three times, no, no, I'm going to let him go. He's innocent. He's innocent. And now this Roman centurion said, surely this man was innocent because of the way he died. So whatever he did was in stark contrast to the way everybody else normally dies. Yeah, you can only imagine what that's like. So it says here, he says, when all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. So we have two groups here. We have just some casual bystanders, some watchers, and we have believers. And the casual bystanders that saw this, it affected them. They beat their breasts because of the way this man died. So different than the way I would do it, or the way that you would do it. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, he didn't open his mouth. He chose to be there for a reason. And now it's over. We don't have it is finished in here. That's in another gospel, right? It's a wonderful idea, though, that Jesus said it's done. It's over. I did it. I got all the way there. In verse 50, now there was a man named Joseph, a member of the council, a good and upright man, he says, who had not consented to their decision and action. He came from the Judean town of Arimathea, and he was waiting for the kingdom of God. Yeah, all of them mention Joseph. Joseph of Arimathea. You know, and a couple things about him. He is on the Sanhedrin, one of the 70s, the elders of the people. You know, he is wealthy. He says he's a good and upright man. And he couldn't have been there when they voted because it was a unanimous vote to kill Jesus. And it says here he did not consent to that. So they probably forgot to call him. They forgot to text him. Right? And they just had to do without his attendance when they tried Jesus. Now there's another guy that John tells us about. Nicodemus. Remember Nick? Remember Nick at night that came? Right, to talk to Jesus, who is also a member of the Sanhedrin. We don't hear about him until John, until after all of Jerusalem has been destroyed, and it's safe to talk about Nicodemus. Didn't get brought up. Joseph. He says, going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body. Then he took it down, wrapped it in linen cloth, and placed it in a tomb cut in the rock, one in which no one has been laid. And by this probably is not his tomb. I'm sure he was going to check in with the owner and just pay some rent on it or something. But what you have is we're getting close to 6 o'clock. At 6 o'clock on Friday, it becomes the Sabbath. You can't do any work. You can't carry anything. You can't make certain linked journeys, right? So he gets this done in the fastest way possible. The nearest place he can find to put Jesus' body, he puts it in there. And it says here, it was preparation day. The Sabbath was about to begin. The women who come with Jesus from Galilee followed Joseph and saw the tomb and how his body was laid in it. They went home, prepared spices and perfumes, but they rested on the Sabbath in obedience to the commandment. So they can't show up until the sun comes up. Actually, they could go in the dark on Saturday, but nobody goes anywhere in the dark there. Now it's 6 o'clock. Jesus is in the tomb. Not his tomb. Rich man's tomb. Right. And he's hastily covered. Not all the spices were there. John tells us Nicodemus had brought 60-something pounds of spices, right? But they didn't have a chance to do it all right, and so the women were going to come and redo it. That never happens, does it? Come and do it right. We've got Jesus. That takes us to what we call Good Friday. And then we're at the Sabbath and nothing happens. Now, a lot of churches, when they do Good Friday services, well, and a lot of them at the end of the Monday, Thursday, they strip the altar. Have you ever been in a church that did that? They take all this stuff away. To recognize until Jesus is risen from the dead, we have no hope. We have nothing. And of course, we know Jesus is risen from the dead. We are children of the resurrection. We are people of the resurrection. We celebrate the resurrection all the time. Next week, we're just going to have a chance to think about it on its setting in the Jewish calendar. But there was no hope at that point. And Luke leaves it there. And we're going to leave Luke here until next Sunday. Because we're going to see some things in Luke that don't come up in the other Gospels about that particular Sunday. We're going to see Jesus going for a hike. And that's important. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about why that's important next week. What do we do with this? Do you remember the night before all this happened? Jesus said, I want you to remember something. I had a body. A body. That Jesus actually went through this. Now, how important is that to you? Well, when you wake up in the morning and you roll out of bed and that knee hurts and the back hurts and the hip hurts and you're going, okay, I don't think God understands this at all. Does God understand pain? Yeah. When you have temptation, when you have trials, when you have problems with patience, when you have anxieties, when you have your body just messing up your whole brain pattern, does Jesus understand that? Does he understand what it means to live like you? Yes. Now, how important is that to remember? Well, if you don't remember it, you're not going to talk to Jesus about it, are you? You're going to say, yeah, he wouldn't understand. But the whole point is he does understand. And he wants you to remember that. And he sweated this thing out. He did not want to do this. He felt all of that pain. He felt every blow, every mocking punch. He felt it all. He tried to carry that cross and couldn't do it. Yeah. How important is that to remember? Only once a year. We only have to remember that once a year, right? Jesus says, as often as you do this, do it in remembrance of me. Remember, remember. I know. I know. You can talk to me as a high priest. You can talk to me to represent you to God because I know. I became flesh. Again, one of these candles represents the humanity of Jesus. And one of them represents the deity of Jesus. And these other ones just to keep me warm. All the things that we go through and we forget, don't forget. Don't forget. When you're sorry, when you're sorrowful, when you're sad, when you're happy, when you're joyful, when you're in pain, when you're delighted, remember, Jesus understands. And he doesn't want you to forget that. And he paid the price. You don't have to go through what he went through. He did it for you. He did it for me. Before we even ask him to do it. And we remember that. When the little piece of bread, it is small, fits in those little things. But you can taste it, you can touch it, you can feel it, you can see it, you can smell it, because that's what your body does for you. And a little bit of juice that represents his blood, the lifeblood. And we do that. We decided to do it every week here, sometimes more often, because we have memory problems. We forget. And we don't want to forget this. And we don't want to remember it just once a year. So we take the bread and we take the juice and we do what Jesus asked us to do, is to remember. Before we do that, we're going to ask the music team to come up.